we plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life. Zen founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode. So I'm reading this book called The Productivity Project. It's by Chris Bailey, and the subtitle is Accomplishing More by Managing Your Time, Attention, and Energy. And I'm actually not a fan of productivity books in general because I feel like they mostly all tell you the same thing that you've been hearing for 10 years. You can read in any article on Lifehacker. But I like this one because this guy, Chris Bailey, spent a year performing all the productivity tips, tricks, and hacks that he'd heard about and experimenting with them. And he tried going on like no sleep and tried going on a lot of sleep. And then he tried working 90-hour weeks, comparing that to working 20-hour weeks. And he tried coffee versus not, and, you know, drinking alcohol the night before and not, and just really did basically an experiment on himself. And he comes to some pretty interesting conclusions. And I love the way he couches it. He says, basically, a lot of us think about time management and managing your time. And that's really only one of three aspects that folks like us need to worry about. People who are essentially knowledge workers or working with our brains. He says, you can manage your time, but if you don't have attention and energy, then it's worthless to sit in front of a computer and try to do anything. And so the three things that you're balancing are time, attention, and energy. And that's what, as he goes through these experiments, he basically only talks about, I think he tried 100, if I recall, and I think there's like 20 in the book, and these are the ones that worked the best for him.
I like that take on it versus the simple conversation about time management. I think it brings some more nuance to the realization of what you're doing, and that most of us have jobs that don't just demand that we get more work done faster, but that we have clear thoughts and are performing high quality creative work, not just getting a bunch of stuff done.
Right. Most of us fall into the trap of trying to get a bunch of stuff done. And so we can thrash around and get a bunch of little tasks done. And that's why being in email and replying to tweets and just kind of doing a bunch of little things and feeling like you're moving really fast, it feels good. It actually, they've shown in studies that it like fires off, it's not endorphins, but it's some result in your brain that makes you feel very efficient, but you're actually extremely inefficient. And that's what he says you're trying to fight, is this addiction to that firing, the neurons firing. You know, there's some very simple things he talks about, which is like one thing he talks about is even 5 minutes of meditation in the morning. And he says, you don't have to get all fancy with it. You don't have to do anything crazy, but sit there for 5 minutes in silence and focus on your breathing for 5 minutes. Set a timer. And anytime your mind wanders away from your breathing, just gently acknowledge there was a thought about whatever the negative tweet someone sent yesterday or your upcoming launch or a task or whatever. Just bring it back to your breath. Just do that for 5 minutes. And he noticed a stark, stark difference. So it's not 20 minutes. It's not an hour. You know, I mean, I'm sure the more you do, it would be helpful. But some very simple things like that, that has nothing to do with stuffing more tasks or you know, figuring out the right task to work on or anything. He said he found a profound difference than when he did not do that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me when you think about your brain's ability to focus and be fully engaged in a task. And in order to do that well, your brain needs these periods of deep reset, which is sort of what meditation is. It's allowing your brain to kind of saturate in oxygen and nutrients while not working very hard. Makes sense that it's a very old tradition that is kind of tried and true to increase focus and sense of calm.
Speaking of that, I mean, I actually am hoping to get him on. I was talking about getting him on Startups for the Rest of Us to do kind of a dive into the book and look at some other tactics, but I've been impacted by it, I'll say, to say the least. I've been sketching down a few notes from the book, and I started implementing several of them already. And I think the realization I had was kind of this one of, you have to develop habits if you're going to do these things. You can't try to tackle 10 things new all at once, you know, because he gives you 20 tips, you can't do all 20 of them. And so I feel like it's trying to develop a habit around something new and trying to do a single thing at once. And then it's like there's a maintenance. And I think that's what retreats are for me, and I, for most people, is like that reset of looking back and saying, hey, remember that thing that I started 6 months ago with the meditation, or with writing down the three things that I needed to get done that day, or with being mindful of what I'm working on, or using coffee strategically instead of habitually. All these things, I feel like we hear them and a lot of us start implementing them, and then you lose it and you never come back to them. And I think it's easy to say, well, that's because it never works, or I never stick with it. But I think having a reset every month or 3 months or 6 months to just call us back to that is actually beneficial. And I think that's how we get these improvements in ourselves over time, the ability to be less stressed and to be more productive and get more work done. Because I know for myself, I am so much more effective than I used to be. I look back 5 years at how much time I used to waste. I'm a very different person, and it's happened very slowly. There was no one big thing that I did, but it was piling these small approaches and these small improvements on top of one another. And some of them I would pile on and then I'd lose them, and then I'd come back to them and I'd try again. And then eventually, you know, they do become habit. And so that's the thing I've been thinking about, is that not to lose heart or lose faith, I guess, when you try these things and maybe they don't work out right away, but you know somehow they're a fit for you. It's like revisit them, and these things take time to build.
And I think you make a really important point about choosing one thing to try at a time, that we can't reset our whole lives all together. But when we are really thoughtful about what our biggest priority is, and we want to make that shift first. And that, as you say, may change. So sometimes if you are immersed in a project, like doing some writing or something, where it makes sense for you to get up very early and get a couple of quiet hours in before the kids wake up and life gets full and distracting. But there may be a new season in your life in a couple months when the project is over, when you're really realizing that you're operating on a suboptimal amount of sleep, and that getting up early is no longer the most productive strategy for you because you're overly fatigued. And so you need a different strategy to kind of meet the need for well-being that is coming from your life at that time.
I think there's also an element that I've been realizing. It's, you know, let's say several years ago, we have inefficient, working a lot Rob, who's trying to get all this stuff done. And I was basically able to keep up with X amount of work, but I was just churning on it and hammering on it. And as I've become more effective, efficient, or just better at delegating or all this stuff, I can get more done, but I bite off larger and larger things. And I think that's naturally going to happen as an entrepreneur, is that you're ambitious and you want to learn things and you want to experience new things and you want to do bigger things in general. And I don't necessarily mean bigger by monetary standards, but you just want to have more of an impact. And so I feel like a lot of us are always stacking ourselves to the maximum throughput that we can have. And I don't know that that's a bad thing. As long as you don't put yourself underwater, I think it's good to take advantage of the skill and kind of the wisdom or the effectiveness that you develop over time. But when I look back again, 5 or 10 years ago, and I think, man, I'm way more effective than I am now, but I still feel like I'm near capacity, I think that's just going to be the constant. I think that we're always stacking ourselves to that point of kind of what we can accomplish, to the point of our abilities. And I've come to terms with that. And I don't think that that is a bad thing, as long as there are not extended periods of overexertion, right? Or overcommitment, where you're having to work 60, 70 hour weeks, where you're feeling stressed all the time. But the reason that I really started reading this productivity project was I heard about it on a podcast. And about a month ago, well, it was like kind of December and January were just very challenging months for me. A lot of stuff going on. I was feeling stressed and realizing I'm doing too much. I need to make a change. And I think at that point, that's when it's good to kind of dive into something like this and to make one or two dramatic changes to how you work.
And I think a theme in a lot of our conversations, or at least a theme that I feel like I bring up a lot, is the role that monitoring your own emotional well-being plays in whatever strategies for productivity you're using at a given time. You know, ideally, you're pouring your energy into things that you love, and that it's sort of this reinforcement of, yes, I'm going to get up and write early because I love the project I'm working on and it's exciting to me and I'm passionate about it. Obviously, most of us don't live there all the time. Like, it's not constant euphoria. But when you realize that there's a certain amount of emotional drudgery and cynicism and disconnect and frustration and irritability and anger, if I may say, as your wife, that you, sort of you've been working with for the past couple months, like,
hey, what you talking about?
I'm speaking the truth. Then it is.
Edit that out. Editor, edit that out. No, I'm kidding.
You, not everybody does a podcast with their wife. Then there's a reason for that.
Yeah, for real, man. Note to self. And Zen founder on episode 60.
When Sherry tells Rob that he's been irritable and frustrated. Yeah. Okay, so anyway. But it takes your willingness to observe how you're feeling, to have the skill to notice it and not just put your head down and tunnel through, but to pay attention to, like, wait, I'm not feeling well. I'm not enjoying this. I don't like this. I'm not my best self these days. And it's time for a new strategy.
That is it right there. It's to look at where you sit mentally and emotionally and say, this is not right. Like, I'm better than this. Something is wrong. How do I fix it? Right? It's to just go down that thought process, to recognize it, to acknowledge it, and then to find a solution. And that solution may be easy, it may be hard, it may just be a refresh of, like, well, I was something I thought about. Let's be honest here, like, the December, January were not catastrophic. I mean, I've had worse. 2014 as a whole was worse than December and January of this year. But I did feel myself unhappy and not super fulfilled with work and just, you know, struggling to feel like I was being effective and like I was getting things done and not wanting to do a bunch of the tasks that were on my plate and trying to figure out why that was and trying to figure out how to be more motivated, essentially. So it was more like that, you know, that I was struggling with. And what I thought was, you know, I was really motivated and having fun back 90 days ago. So what was different then? And that's kind of what I sat down and looked at. And you know what it came down to? A huge part of it was my mindset. As simple as that sounds, I realized, you know, I was just really relaxed about things. There's no major stress or urgency right this minute that means everything has to get done. And somehow I feel that inside of me that, oh, we're in this big hurry to get stuff done. And 90, 120 days ago, I was just letting things be a little easier and just taking time and relentlessly executing. I mean, that's kind of my deal, is relentless execution, but not being stressed the entire time I was doing it. And so part of it was a mindset shift for me. And the other part was adopting just a few things, you know, that I picked up from the productivity project that I mentioned earlier, and then just making some changes. And we're hiring another person. I actually hired an executive assistant who is helping with some email and some of the HR tasks around Drip, and just things that I noticed that were really kind of a drag.
Oh, so that's why you've started responding to my email more promptly.
Yeah, it's not actually me responding, it's someone else. No, I'm just kidding.
She's nice. It's no, fine.
I've totally.
She can speak for you.
She doesn't respond on my behalf at all. I still, all the words are mine. But that has been why I've been responding to email more frequently, is that she has taken kind of a load, you know, a burden that I was trying to handle. Even after all these years and all the talk I do about delegation, like, I've delegated a ton of stuff, but every 6 months I find there's a new bucket of stuff that winds up on my lap and I have to reset and say, okay, now, how do I find someone to delegate this to? How do I find a way to either not do these things or have someone do them effectively? And that's really what part of this process was for me. And on the same note, you've actually had a pretty big week here. You taught a 2-day intensive class where you were teaching for 8 or 9 hours. You launched the retreat ebook. If you didn't get an email about that, head to zenfounder.com. And we have a link in the right-hand navigation about the Zen Founder Guide to Founder Retreats. And I think you had at least one other pretty big thing going on. How have you been kind of staying sane through all that? Because it's obviously a lot to have on your mind in addition to hanging out with me and the kids and your job.
Yeah, it's definitely been a busy several weeks. You know, in addition to the things that you mentioned, I did that trial where I served as an expert witness, which added a whole other bunch of work to my plate a couple of weeks ago, preparing all that stuff and then testifying for 4 hours. And then I was away for a whole week at a training. So I am actually enjoying quite a bit of internal well-being as well as a lot of productivity externally right now. And I think one of the things that I most attribute that sense of kind of integration and cohesion to is just really diligently practicing yoga every day. And I don't know if listeners are into yoga or what people feel about yoga, but for me, it's been a really, really important way for me to practice that meditative breath, practice having a calm mind, and then also just take care of my flexibility and strength and my physical body. And it's been so important to me that I've actually begun teaching yoga in the clinic where I work and using yoga as an anxiety treatment for with my patients and the people that I do consulting and take care of. It's something that has increasingly a lot of research support behind it as a really powerful tool for helping to monitor anxiety, helping to improve mood. It's even used, beginning to be used quite broadly in the treatment of post-traumatic stress disorder, which is what I spend most of my time doing. So I am feeling really good. I think because I've just made it an important part of my life. I don't get to a studio class every day, but at least I break out the mat and stretch for 20 minutes in the morning. And if I have time for a longer, more intense class, then that just makes it a better day too.
Yeah, it's become a big part of your life over the past, I'd say it's like a year. I know that you did yoga training a little bit before that, but the more you have done it, the more I've seen it impact your well-being and kind of your sense of sanity, I guess, as you're trying to do all the stuff that you juggle.
It's also really fun for me. It's a way to be creative and expressive. And, you know, I've always been an athlete. I was a runner. I was a gymnast when I was a little kid, played volleyball, ran cross country. So, you know, now that I'm almost 40, it feels really good to be in a place where I'm still really athletic and able to do a lot of cool arm balances and stand on my head and all that stuff. And yoga is one of those practices where there's lots and lots of layers. So there's always a new challenge to tackle and a new thing to practice and be good at. And it also, you know, in contrast to some of the work that I do where the payoff or the outcome can take months or years, you know, I don't always know if my clients will get better. I don't always know if the work that I'm doing is going to yield a good outcome. But in yoga, I get like instant gratification after like 20 minutes of work and a little longer session and a little more effort. And I'm learning a new skill and I can just see and feel the difference in my head and in my body. And so it's nice to like have something in my life that I can just really quickly see the benefits from. So different than being a psychologist, different than being a parent. It's kind of all in my control in a way that is nice. That's what's working for me right now.
So my secret is delegation and mindfulness, and yours is yoga exercise.
Yeah.
And there's a body of research that talks about this, right? That talks about, is it specifically about yoga or is it about exercise? About how, is it everyone that it's beneficial for across the board?
Yes, there's tons of research about the benefits of exercise. But yoga in particular has become the focus of research in the last several years. One of, you know, the thinkers and researchers that I follow is a physician affiliated with Harvard named Bessel van der Kolk, and his laboratory did a research study with folks who have post-traumatic stress disorder comparing, I think they did like an 8-week, twice a week yoga practice, and then compared that to pharmacological intervention, so taking medicine. And then I think their third group was like a waitlist group. I can't remember exactly how they set it up, but the yoga practice was more beneficial than the medicine. So one of the ways in which yoga works is to help stabilize heart rate. So those of us who run a little anxious have highly variable heart rates, and we often have heart rate that is asynchronous with our breathing. So yoga, because of the emphasis on breath and the emphasis on kind of calm body, strong movement, yoga can be a pretty powerful way to just help stabilize and reintegrate heart rate and breath. So there's a little mini version of the science, but yes, increasingly, you know, yoga is sort of recognized and is being offered in hospitals. And, you know, our local cancer center has a yoga class. It's something that is becoming, I think, well accepted as a really important piece of mental well-being and physical well-being.
Yeah, for me, you know, I just am not an exerciser. Like, I was an athlete. all through high school and college. And I mean, I used to run 35 hours a week with the track team at UC Davis, and we competed at a pretty high level. I ran against folks who competed in the Olympics. I mean, I was intense, right? I mean, it was pretty much my whole life. I was kind of going to school just to, because I wanted the degree, but I wanted to run track, and that was a big piece of it. But
I thought you joined the track team so you could meet me.
That was the other reason. Yeah, I forgot. But once that happened, and kind of once got injured, had knee surgery, and I didn't make it back for my last year, and I realized that I really didn't like exercising, even though it was so intense, and I used to lift weights and do all this stuff. I loved the competition, and I loved the team and the teammates and such, but it hasn't been my thing. So I struggle with it, and every year at my retreat or whenever I have one, I kind of re-up the motivation to do it. And I've gotten better over the past few years, and I'm starting to do more with it. And so I'm now running on an elliptical. I have a tough time running because my knee's still kind of banged up, and it's hard for me to pound on pavement and stuff. But I run the elliptical. I do the push-ups I've talked about, where I do 30 push-ups a day. But I'm not super consistent with it, but at least it's better than nothing. I mean, I had years where I just did absolutely nothing, and that's not that great. So I can totally see I can see the difference in you, I guess, is what it is. Like, since you really started consistently doing this and consistently practicing yoga and latched onto it, and it latched onto you as well. Like, it's such a good fit. And I feel like if you're listening to this, it's like you'll want to find something that resonates with you. And that may mean yoga. And you may love yoga, and that may mean running, and you may love running through the forest near your house, or running in the city streets, or that may mean being in the garage on your elliptical and forcing yourself to do it by watching Prophet or Walking Dead, which is how I do it. I'm literally in the garage on this running machine, and the only way I can kind of force myself to not be irritated by the time that I'm wasting and not being quote unquote productive with it is that I'm able to watch a TV show that otherwise have to spend time.
You're such a soulful guy.
Can't you tell?
Yeah, you love those long solitary runs to just clear your head and be one with nature, don't you?
Solitary runs must be accompanied by either a podcast, an audiobook, or if I'm thinking, I'm going to think of a bunch of to-dos and I need to have some type of notebook to write them down. I mean, that's it. It's like terrible, but such is my makeup, and I've become, I definitely need downtime, and I need time when I'm not thinking about work and not in operation mode. And I'm thinking about that a little bit. When I am in operation mode all the time, it does get exhausting. However, my natural makeup and my natural state is to be thinking and active, and my mind to be going and either consuming information or to be going through things that I'm doing and planning for. And so all that to say, yeah, I think that you need to find individual for you, like what is it that works for you, and what is it that's going to be sustainable for you that you can build a habit of?
And I think part of that is, what do you love? All exercise is helpful for emotional well-being. Yoga has some additional benefits because of the focus on breath. So if someone is running a little bit depressed or feeling lower in their mood, then, you know, running is great. That burst of endorphins, 20 minutes of walking a day is as effective for treatment of mild depression as taking an SSRI. That research is pretty well established. But yoga really has some extra benefits for anxiety and for managing tension in the body. So as much as you've made a solid endorsement of running on an elliptical in the garage, I think, you know, it's helpful for people to understand how all exercise is not necessarily created equal. So I'm going to put in like an extra special plug for yoga as maybe medically supported anxiety and depression management.
Got it. No, and that totally makes sense. I wouldn't argue with that. I think that each of us has our struggles with finding the things that work for us. And I guess for me, it's like been taking the little steps. You know, it was like doing the 30 push-ups a day. And then it was even when I started the elliptical again, that's what is almost 2 months ago, I was literally doing 5 minutes a day. It was that trying to build the habit. I would set the alarm and I'd do it for 5 minutes. I felt so stupid, but I was like, I could do anything for 5 minutes. That's not that much of a waste of time. That's just a break from work. And then I've now worked up to where I can accept 20 minutes. I can do more than that physically, right? I don't get out of breath or whatever, but it's like, It's just the mental aspect of like, ugh, I don't want to do this. I should be doing something else. And you don't have that at all. Like you look, I can tell you look forward to yoga. Like you carve out the time. You go to the 75 or the 90 minute yoga classes and you get up early on weekends to do it. It's obviously super beneficial for you.
Yeah, I'm a little bit obsessed, maybe a little bit addicted. I would go every day, multiple times a day if I could.
These two topics may have sounded a little disparate, but I think the point here is finding something that works for you, that at least gets you moving in that direction of these coping mechanisms of being your best self. And hopefully that includes some type of exercise. Hopefully that includes figuring out how to be a good human being while you're going through the stress of launching and managing work and being a founder and probably having a family. I mean, just all this stuff. And I think each of us is on our own journey, but we can learn from the things that other folks are going through. And I think a big piece of it is like identifying, A, that you're feeling this way, you know, that you are stressed or you are not operating as your best self. And then it's kind of admitting to that. And then it's looking at, all right, so other people have gone through this. There has to be something out there that can help. And whether it's listening to this podcast and hearing things we did, or whether it's reading the Productivity Project, or whether it's starting to run more, or whether it's starting yoga, you know, there's something out there that's going to resonate with you and that's going to pull you out of it. So hopefully this was helpful. And, you know, if you feel like we've been helpful for you, you could help support us by going to supportzenfounder.com. And we have a Patreon running where you can pledge a dollar or a couple dollars a month if you feel like you get that much value out of the podcast. We'd love to have you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.